Okay, I'm going to now turn the microphone over to the chair of our Constitution and Bylaws Committee, our second vice president, Gabe Griffith.
All right. Thank you, Judy. So I don't forget at the end, I want to start by thanking the committee members. First of all, I don't think I can live up to what Christy said last night, but Dr. Jerry Consular has been a huge part of this committee over the years, former chair, and just so knowledgeable about Constitution and Robert's Rules of Order and everything, and he's going to be sorely missed on this committee. Other committee members, Roger Peterson is kind of our default historian on there now that brings also a lot of knowledge to our committee and constitutional experience. So thank you, Roger, for all of your guidance. Sarah Harris, our newest member. Dave Jackson. And also Steve Mendelson, who brings a lot of knowledge to this committee. I don't think I could even begin to do any of this stuff without all of them. So thank you to everybody. Also, just real quick before we go on to the constitutional stuff, and I know Judy's going to thank a lot of people later, but let's thank Judy Wilkinson for all of her work during this convention. Judy has done so much over since she was elected last year, and this is her first convention. It's been a great convention, so thank you, Judy. I think that is everybody. Hopefully I didn't forget anyone, and as I said last night, if there's any committee members here that I did forget anybody, please yell out and remind me. Otherwise, we're going to move on. We had the first reading of several proposed amendments yesterday. So today we will have the second reading and move on with action and debate and passing on them. So what we will do is I will have asked Jeff Tom to read the amendments, and once he's done, I will give the committee's recommendation. So thank you, and if you're ready, go ahead and start reading, Jeff.
Yes, now it's on. I got it on. Okay, this is on sustaining members, Article 7.5. Sustaining members shall have all the rights of membership conferred upon... Oh, this is existing language, excuse me. Sustaining members shall have all the rights of membership conferred upon the chapter members, members at large, and life members, except that sustaining members shall not have the right to vote and may not hold office in the council or any of its chapters. Proposed change would be to delete everything from except to the end of the sentence. So the new language of that Article 7.5 would read, sustaining members shall have all the rights of membership conferred upon the chapter members, members at large, and life members. Gabe?
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Jeff. The committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
We need a second?
In a committee, it actually...
We do not. Thank you. Sorry.
But here's the mic if you want
to... Okay.
Discussion. Charlene, remember, madam, say your name that you'd like the floor.
Yes, I have a question. Under the change in the... Constitution or the bylaws, would a person who is fully sighted be able to be president or one of the vice presidents?
That, yes, please.
That part of the Constitution is not being changed in this amendment. That is dealt with elsewhere. So, no, that would not be changed. This is just addressing membership.
Christy.
I have it. Thank you. My question is, that means that they will be able to have the right to vote and hold office?
Yes.
What would be the difference between somebody who's a sustaining member and somebody who's an active member?
They pay more money.
This is Karen. That goes along with my question. For those who are new, because I know there are some new people, can someone please just give us a short definition of a sustaining member?
How much is it? Is it 50 bucks?
I don't remember the exact amount off the top of my head. The biggest reason for this is for being able in the next year or so for Paul Shane to be able to go out and actively recruit sustaining members to bring in more money for the council. So,
Madam President, I hate to do this to one of my closer friends, but there needs to be that piece of information, because sustaining member has to mean something more, otherwise it tends to cheapen what a regular member is. So I really agree that we need to know what a sustaining member has to pay.
Peter reminds me, and I can pull up the document here in a second, but Peter reminds me it's either, I think, $25 or $50 for sustaining members. And so it would, I think, mainly give sustaining members rights rather than just giving a donation. If anyone has any suggestions, I guess, on language, maybe they could do this.
Madam President, Frank Welty.
Go ahead, Frank.
I speak in opposition to this amendment. I believe that a sustaining member should not be a voting member. If you want to be a voting member, then become a regular member of this organization. And if you want to contribute additional money, that's fine. But I think that the sustaining membership is essentially an honorary membership, and so I do not think that a voting privilege is appropriate.
Madam President?
So in our Constitution, people who are not active become sustaining members. What I'm saying is that basically, if you haven't attended 3 meetings, or if you have, if you're not attending, what generally has happened is that membership has become a sustaining membership. I think the word sustaining is, I understand, like for National Public Radio and things like that. When they're using the word sustaining, they're using it as a continual membership, and that's kind of what I thought Paul was talking about. I just see a real danger in having people having sustaining, quote unquote, I'd like to call it something else, but I see a real danger in people paying money and having votes and running for office and we losing who we are.
Jeff asked for the floor next.
Madam President, I move to postpone action on this issue until the next convention. If there's a second, I'll talk about my motion. I think there is some merit to what we are trying to do, but I think it needs to be more completely flushed out and thought out. And that's the reason for my motion.
That's clear from the discussion.
Is that motion viable with another motion on the floor?
I don't see why not.
It's not like a suspended.
If you have a new
it's a new motion, and I would assume it's a
motion to table.
No,
it's not a motion to table. Postpone. Okay. I'm going to rule that the motion is in order. We have a resolution that may show why Jeff's thought is a good one. All in favor?
We have to have discussion on the motion.
Any discussion of Jeff's motion to postpone discussion of this till next year, next convention? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Moving on to the next amendment. Peter? All right.
Is, and I can't remember this, but is Friends of CCP still, is that still active? I mean, I know it's not active, but is there anything we need to do to reconstitute it?
Not at this time, since we're reading constitutional amendments.
Okay. But I'm not sure, I can't remember where it shows up.
We'll check, but that's not, it's out of order right now.
Okay.
Okay, this is section 10.11, censure, suspension, and removal of officers and directors. The original language of section 10.11 is as follows. The convention may remove any officer or director of the council between elections only by a two-thirds vote of the council members in convention assembled. The convention must receive notice of the impending vote to remove at least 24 hours. Let me read that with a little better. The convention must receive notice of the impending vote to remove at least 24 hours in advance of such vote. If any officer or director should be so removed, a replacement may be elected by a simple majority vote, as in the case of the regular elections. The replacement shall serve for the unexpired term of the removed officer or director. A president so removed shall not serve as immediate past president. The proposed change is to delete the section and rewrite as follows.
Jen, could we just say that this is a result of what happened last year?
Yes. Yes. This is a result of the removal motion last year. New language, 10.11.1, general. An officer or director of the council may be censured, suspended, or removed for cause. A documented breach for cause, colon. A documented breach of the CCB constitution and bylaws, or of the written policies established by the board of directors, including 10.11.1.1, policy regarding expectations, roles, and responsibilities for members of the board of directors, 10.11.1.2, confidentiality policy, 10.11.1.3, policy regarding conflicts of interest and discharge of duties, 10.11.1.4, any policies subsequently adopted by the board of directors. Now we're on section 10.11.2, or subsection, I should say.
Can we just dispense with all the, and just go with the last two or three numbers so that we don't have to keep repeating all the 11s? Can you do that yet?
I'm not sure if that would be less or more. I'm not sure. I see where you're going. Conditions. She's just trying to make it easier for all of us. 10.11.2.1. A censure may be issued for a first-time breach of the Constitution and bylaws or of existing board policy, while suspension or removal may be imposed. While suspension or removal may be imposed for what the board deems as an extreme breach or repeated breaches of the Constitution and bylaws or of existing board policy, regardless of whether such breach or breaches represent a first-time violation. Section 10.11.2.2. An officer or director may not be censured, suspended, or removed for behavior such as expressing strong disagreement or arguing for an unpopular position. 10.11.3, censure. The board of directors may censure an officer or director between conventions or at the board meeting scheduled during the annual convention by a two-thirds roll call vote. When an officer or director is censured, he or she will be given written notice that should the offending behavior continue or a separate breach of the Constitution, bylaws, or of existing board policy occur, suspension and or removal may result. 10.11.4, suspension. 10.11.4.1, the board of directors may suspend an officer or director between conventions or at the board meeting scheduled during the annual convention for an extreme breach or repeated breaches of the Constitution and bylaws or of existing board policy by a two-thirds roll call vote. Upon imposition of the suspension, the suspended officer or director forfeits the right to vote as a member of the board, to participate in board deliberations, or in any other way to be a part of board communications. 10.11.4.2, a suspension must be referred to the membership for ratification at the next scheduled convention following the board meeting at which such action was taken. Ratification of a suspension will be by a two-thirds roll, vote, two-thirds, not roll call, sorry. Let me reread the sentence. Ratification of a suspension will be by a two-thirds vote of the membership. In no event shall a suspension be longer than 1 year from the date of its ratification by the membership. 10.11.5, removal. 10.11.5.1, the board of directors may suspend an officer or director with recommendation for removal between conventions or at the board meeting scheduled during the annual convention for a breach or repeated breaches of the Constitution and bylaws or of existing board policy, then in the opinion of the board is so egregious as to warrant such removal. A two-thirds roll call vote of the board will be required for such recommendation. 10.11.5.2, removal of an officer or director must be referred to and upheld by a two-thirds vote of the membership at the next scheduled convention following the board meeting at which such action was taken. The convention must receive notice of the impending vote at least 24 hours in advance of such vote. 10.11.5.3, if an officer or director is so removed, a replacement will be elected in accordance with the provisions set forth elsewhere in this Constitution. The replacement officer or director shall serve the unexpired term of the removed officer or director. A president so removed shall not serve as immediate past president. 10.11.6, causes for removal of an officer or director. In addition to the causes referenced in 10.11.1, an officer or director may be removed for one or more of the following causes or multiple breaches of the same cause. 10.11.6.1, failure to attend three-quarters of scheduled board meetings called in any 12-month period. 10.11.6.2, a documented breach of ethics or conflict of interest. 10.11.6.3, employment with the council. 10.11.6.4, repeated discourtesy or disrespect shown toward other board members or members of the council. 10.11.6.5, repeated failure to adhere to Robert's Rules of Order. And that is the end.
All right, thank you, Jeff, for reading that. As Jeff said, this came out of the motion and removal last year, so Jeff and Judy established a task force for putting this together, so I guess I should acknowledge, I forgot earlier to acknowledge Gene Lozano and Mitch Pomerantz for working with me on putting this together, so thank you guys. That being said, the committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
This puts you on the spot, but could you just briefly suggest what the new additions mean?
I guess what it means is that I have to be nicer to Jeff. No, basically what this does is puts into the Constitution more lays out better reasons of why somebody can or can't, or may not, be suspended or removed. Also, the Constitution currently does not address censure, which is basically telling somebody that they've done wrong. There was a lot of talk last year when this issue came up that there, what we as an organization didn't have a lot of guidance on this issue. And so our attempt here was to, as concisely as possible, and I know it doesn't sound that way with this resolution, but as concisely as possible, try to give reasons for, or guidance for us as an organization and the board of directors as the governing board between conventions to be able to handle a situation that will hopefully not arise.
Does that answer your question?
Thank you. I think that may preempt a lot of what might follow. Is there discussion from the floor on this amendment? Donna Sanchez, would somebody get Donna a mic?
Jeff, there was a section that you read, something that said that the censure would only last for a year. Does that mean that person can go back to that position?
The suspension.
Suspension. The censure is basically just, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, but basically just writing a letter to them or you know, formally announcing what's happened and how it's wrong. Suspension is where they would essentially still be on the board, but not be allowed to be an active participant on the board or in any board calls, votes, email discussion lists, any of that, until that suspension is removed. And yes, it does say that suspension cannot last more than 1 year from the time that the convention ratifies it.
You're welcome.
Madam President.
Pam Pology seeks the floor.
Forgive me, I may be asking this question at the wrong time, and if I am, I know you'll tell me I'm out of order. Or maybe you can tell me when I could ask it. Pursuant to this motion that was passed last year, is there anything that could be placed in that regarding harassment that has occurred pursuant, or is that a different topic? Or thank you.
Pam, it's Gabe. I think things in the past would be not addressed by this. Is it habeas corpus that doesn't allow you to be convicted of something that wasn't against the law when you did it? This amendment would not take effect until July 1st of this year. Are you asking harassment over the last year or harassment in the future? Current harassment.
Would it be covered? Would harassment be covered?
Harassment would be covered, but not until this item goes into effect on July 1st.
Yes, it covers. I'm sorry. Let me have it. A lot of the Jeff read a number of possibilities and behaving incorrectly toward other board members or boards. Members or members would be considered a violation and punished, and you know, and we could take action. So it's covered.
Thank you.
I want to speak in favor of this motion. I think it really defines much more clearly the process of censure, suspension, the whole thing. And to my way of thinking, what I'm hoping this will do is that it will help us to, you know, not react too quickly or too emotionally to any given situation. I think sometimes there's a tendency for us to perhaps react in ways that we might regret later. Thank you.
Jean seeks the floor. Jean Lozano.
Thank you. Obviously, I'm in support of this. I'm sorry.
There's just something I thought when Jeff was reading, and unfortunately I can't give section numbers and subparts, but it talks about, you know, where in basically, you know, that the person, you know, violating the Constitution or the policies of the board. There's a few places like that. Can we consider put and or, because you could be both violating the Constitution and the policies or individual ones. So I'm just wondering if that's something that could be considered for inclusion.
Gene, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
I think putting, you're right, I think there's at least two or three places where it says that, and just putting an and or is easy enough.
I actually, as a writer of thousands of laws, the and and the or, the and includes the or in this case, so I don't think there's a need for that. I totally agree with you, Gene, but I don't think it's needed. The or includes the and, I should say. It would be.
Gabe and I are playing hand the mic back and forth. Further discussion. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Mike wanted to say something.
Mike Keithley?
Yeah.
Well, my question was, in the removal section, there's a paragraph about people working for the CCB. Was that defined somewhere else in the Constitution? About
yes, Mike. Employees cannot be, you know, serve on the board. It would be an honorable if somebody, you know, we hired someone, then they could not serve on the board. Okay, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Passes. Thank you.
Okay.
About half a second for opposition.
Yeah, well.
Article 11.6. The current language is, the president of the California Council of Lions shall be in charge of the management of the council's daily affairs and shall have the authority to hire and fire staff members. However, professional staff may be terminated only after consultation with the entire board of directors. Proposed change, rewrite as follows. New language. The chief executive officer is responsible for the day-to-day operation of the organization. If a chief executive officer is present, the president is still ultimately responsible for all aspects of the organization in conjunction with the board of directors, but will assign and delegate, with the consent of the board, the CEO, the appropriate authority required to oversee all aspects of the organization, with the exception of the facilitation of board, committee, and membership activities. I'm going to read that again because I think there's a two missing. And so I'm going to put the two in and read it. Let me get here. If a chief executive officer is present, the president is still ultimately responsible for all aspects of the organization in conjunction with the board of directors, but will assign and delegate, with the consent of the board, to the chief executive officer the appropriate, in fact, let me write that in because otherwise it may get lost, to the chief executive officer the appropriate authority required to oversee all aspects of the organization, with the exception of the facilitation of board, committee, and membership activities. Is that clear? Do you want it to be read one more time?
There is more.
The board is responsible for hiring and terminating the chief executive officer. The president is charged with the individual supervision and evaluation of the chief executive officer. The chief executive officer is the only employee of the board. All other staff are the employees of the chief executive officer. That concludes the new language.
And the committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
No, we don't need seconds, as it turns out. Yeah. Discussion. Christy needs the mic.
Okay.
Okay, I have a question. So if the employees are employees of, does it say of or under?
Of.
Okay, so the difference would be that they are not employees of. Tell me the difference between why we would have them be employees of the CEO rather than employees of the board or of the CCB.
Christy, up to this point, the president of the board has basically functioned as the executive director or CEO of the organization and been responsible for all contracts, hirings, firings, etc. Now that we have a chief executive officer, basically what this is saying is that the board and the president are responsible for hiring or firing that chief executive officer. The CEO would then be the one responsible for all hirings and firings of any other employees. Does that... those employees would report to the CEO, not report to the board and the president. Does that make sense?
I have a question.
I want to make sure that I'm not fumbling around this morning and not answering Christy's question.
But you can't just say, I have a question, say your name.
Peter Pardini.
Wait, Peter, I heard you first, then I heard Donna, and then Frank.
So basically, all employees are, I mean, CCB employees, all employees. What I think this amendment is trying to say is that the direct supervision responsibility of all employees, of all other employees besides the executive director, falls under the executive director, the executive director, the CEO. The CEO. Is supervised directly by the board president.
Yes.
I'm not sure if that's clearly stated.
What if we were to do this? And this isn't perfect, but it might work. The chief executive officer is the only employee of the board, period. All other staff shall be hired, fired, and supervised by the chief executive officer. That would be a little clear. Now let me try and do it.
He's gonna let him write it.
All other staff are, or no, shall. Let me do that. Let me erase words here.
He's writing a little bit for a minute. We'll get to you, Donna, and we'll get to you, Frank.
It went into grade, whatever.
Yes, that's right. If you can just tell me what you're saying, I can...
Okay. All other staff shall be hired, fired, and supervised by the CEO.
Hired, fired,
and supervised.
And supervised.
Supervised by
the CEO.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
That'll be the final sentence of the section.
That would work for me.
Donna?
Yes. My question is, can he hire 10 people?
No.
Or can he hire 5 or 2? Does the board...
Any time that he knows what the budget is, we know what staff and contracts are budgeted, so... He obviously has to work within those guidelines. He just can't go out and hire, 20 people.
And if he hires them, he can be fired. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
He does that. He's the one gets fired. Does that answer your question, Donna? Okay. Frank, sixth floor.
This is Frank Welty, and I'm uncomfortable with the CEO having sole hiring authority in the sense that I'm comfortable with the CEO having supervisorial and operational authority over staff, especially clerical staff. But, for example, I do not know that it would be appropriate for the CEO to be the person who would be selecting our next director of governmental affairs. I think that's more of a... I don't think that would be a hire that we would want to have at the sole discretion of one person.
Just 1 second. I would like Gabe to respond to what Frank says. Do we? Currently, that we have, I mean, the CEO really does have that authority.
I'd
refer to you or Jeff as people that have been involved in the hiring and of staff more than me.
Seems to me
I would say to Frank the following. I understand your point, Frank, but clearly we are in a new culture. We are in a culture where the chief executive officer is running the day-to-day operations of the organization. And you can't just say, well, we're going to give him this, but not that. We have to give him the general authority that is provided to a chief executive officer. Having said that, it is up to the board and the president to make sure that the chief executive officer understands that when you're going to have an advocate, you know, it better be someone who is able to do the job. And I'm, without getting into all the details of what our director of governmental affairs should be, we need to get that understanding through to the CEO. That's our responsibility.
And I want to just say further that we have a very respectful CEO who would never hire somebody like that without consultation. Keep reminding you, CEO makes the wrong decisions.
Okay. What this does is make it clear how it operates. In other words, the board with the president oversees, in general, the CCB. The president is the head of the board, who then becomes the supervisor of staff, I mean, of the executive director or CEO. If we don't allow that person to have the authority to hire or dismiss or control the staff or other elements of operation of the CCB, we're tying their hands of being successful. They are answerable to the president. The president is answerable to the board. The board is answerable to the membership. So there is a check and balance. If the executive director or CEO goes off on wrong areas, we can't decide that, okay, this one is good. We have to make rules for future. We'd like to see Paul stay around for a while, but the future comes along. So this just makes it clear where the chain of commands is. It's the outline of where the chain of command for operation is.
Gene, you're next.
You know, we are not, we will stay as a consumer organization. We are not going to be an agency. But the thing is, this is one aspect that is just like any organization has staff. For instance, the Society for the Blind or the Lighthouse for the Blind. The executive, well, the CEO is the person who has, as it's been stated, they have a budget that has been given to them by the board. They've been given approval for positions, and it's their responsibility to hire somebody who meets the criteria there. And it's not the board that gets into that. Now, the thing is, the organization is a personnel committee, and that's where such things as the job description and what the guidelines would be going through the personnel, and that's something the CEO would work with the personnel committee on those things, to assure you. But this is, as you know, is standard practice. Thank you.
If there's, I only want to hear if there's somebody who wants to speak in opposition. Okay, we've had call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. This passes. And okay. We're moving on.
We're in Article 15.4. The current language is as follows. The funds raised by any chapter belong to that chapter for its use. However, as a tax-exempt not-for-profit organization, each chapter has an obligation to report its fundraising activities to the appropriate agencies of state and federal government. Thus, if a chapter does not have its own tax-exempt status, it must raise funds as a part of and under the tax-exempt status of CCB. Therefore,
Jeff, could you start?
I could. Hang on, let me get this back out of here. Yeah, it was a. You want me to start over?
Please.
Yeah, I will. This is important.
Yes, it is.
Okay, 15.4. The funds raised by any chapter belong to that chapter, that's correct, for its use. However, as a tax-exempt not-for-profit organization, each chapter has an obligation to report to the appropriate agencies of state and federal government. Thus, if a chapter does not have its own tax-exempt status, it must raise funds as a part of and under the tax-exempt status of CCB. Therefore, each such chapter shall annually report to the CCB treasurer no later than December 31 the nature of its fundraising projects during the year, together with the amounts of the proceeds realized and the expenses incurred in connection with such projects. So, the section would be rewritten, as follows. New language. The funds raised by any chapter or affiliate belong to that chapter or affiliate to be used by them as long as such use is not contrary to the purposes of CCB. Except where otherwise stated in this Constitution, every chapter and affiliate must report all fundraising activities, the nature of fundraising, amounts of proceeds and expenses incurred, financial reserves, treasury balances, investments, programmatic activities, and other variables as determined by the president or their designee to the CCB on a timeline and format determined by the CCB president or their designee. 15.4.1. Current language. Oh, sorry. Gabe, is this part of the same amendment, or is this separate?
It had been written as a separate one, but I'm wondering if it might almost be better to take it up.
Okay, so there's no new there's no old language, and it's just a new section as follows. Chapters and affiliates holding their own 501c3 status are exempt from reporting fundraising activities and financial information to the state office. Essentially, they're exempt from Section 15.4.
There you go. Now, Gabe, here's your mic.
Thank you, and the committee recommends a do pass, and I so move.
Okay, discussion.
Yes, sorry.
Oh, you know here's again. He shows up at lots of meetings. So I think now we're going to say, where's Peter? Needs the mic.
In this constitutional change, do we need to state that I know that it's up to the discretion, it's up to the president to determine when chapters will submit their financial information at all. But do we need to state again that at least once a year? Because we really do need fundraising and other information at least once a year from chapters and affiliates.
It says on a timeline and format determined by the president or their designee.
But do we need to? But do we need to have? I would prefer.
Hang on, yeah. Peter.
Okay. I'm just telling you what it says. Don't. I'm not supporting or opposing. I'm just.
So, Peter, would you want something like for it to say on a timeline and format determined by the president or their designee, and that. Or something like and that this be at minimum once a year or something like
right,
that.
Right, perfect.
So you heard what Peter suggested, and we consider that appropriate, obviously. I heard Jean first, and then I heard Christy.
Where it's stated that. A chapter or affiliate that is incorporated then does not have to turn in the financial reports, paraphrasing, to CCB. I think, and I know it's going beyond, but that we should have something clearly stating that it's understood that those chapters and affiliates that are incorporated, they are responsible for themselves to turn in the paperwork to the appropriate, what is it, Attorney General's office, so that there's no question, because it's just kind of, oh, I don't have to do anything, and if the chapter, perhaps leadership at the time is not that familiar with the requirements for a corporation, their corporation could lapse and, you know, fail for whatever for not providing that information. So I'm just thinking it so it's there, so there's no misunderstanding.
Gene, do you think, would that be in that section, whatever, 4.1?
I want to...
Just an extra sentence that says... Jeff, can you read the 15.4.1 one more time for us?
Yes. The funds raised by any chapter or affiliate belong to that chapter or affiliate to be used by them as long as such use is not...
No. This has to do with the corporation.
Oh, just in the ones that do have their 501c3s?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Gene.
Yeah.
And by the way, this all may change if we can pursue it. There is now a...
Well, let's deal with it at that time.
I'm just trying to find it.
Okay, I have it here. I can try to read it.
Chapters and affiliates holding their own 501c3 status are exempt from reporting fundraising activities and financial information to the state office.
And then I'm suggesting...
And then how about if we say, however... These chapters and affiliates are still responsible for reporting their own financial information to the appropriate authorities?
Is it the Attorney General's office?
I would say.
Okay, then that's fine. I that addresses my need for that clarity.
I think that's it. I shouldn't express personal opinions, but...
For reporting...
Jeff, there are two ahead of you, Frank.
Information to the appropriate state and federal entities.
Yeah.
Okay, I just have a really super nitpicky one.
Go ahead,
Christy. It says the president or their designee. I'm sorry. That just bugs me. That is...
Me too, as an English teacher, Christy, but you know what?
Can we just say or designee?
President or
designee.
Oh, take out the word there.
Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
Take it out. President or designee. Good. Wait a minute, Kathy. There are two ahead of you. There are three ahead of you. No, Jeff is first. I moved him up. Jeff is next. Frank spoke for the floor after
no,
Jeff.
No, I'm not.
Then Kathy.
I'm fine. Take me away.
You're fine?
Yeah.
All right. Frank and then Kathy Schmidt-Whitaker.
Yes, I support this amendment. I do have a question which probably should be doesn't need to be acted on right now, but I'm just raising the question of, while I understand that an affiliate or a chapter that has its own corporate and 501c3 status has that level of financial independence in terms of reporting, are there, is there a case to be made for some sort of reporting requirements in order to support the CCB's grant-making efforts and the like, regardless of the legal independence factor? And I think that's too big a topic to cover here on the floor, but I want to put it out there on the record.
I have that in my mind too, Frank. We do need to have information from our... They're not exempt from giving us information. We need to work on how we'll do that appropriately so that we're not stepping on toes, but we get information we need. Kathy.
I am supportive of this, and I also understand the those chapters that would like to have their independent 501c status. I feel that we need to have some sort of verification submitted to the state office of that fact. So in the statement that Jeff had just read, could there be added that with verification to the state office, the chapters with independent 501c3 status, et cetera? Because a chapter can say, oh, we have one, but if they really don't, then what?
Maybe Peter as treasurer or someone could address this as well, but I would feel that requirement would be implied in this, that if you're going to exempt them, then they have to give verification of that before we can say you don't have to do something.
I would like to have something in the Constitution that states they need to provide verification.
So how about this? Let me just say this. Chapters and affiliates who have, I'm writing as I'm talking, verified with the CCB office that they hold,
are you in that computer mode again?
That they hold their own 501c3 status, are exempt from reporting fundraising activities and financial information to the state office. Ooh.
Does that work? Sounds like it does.
I would. Can I make one friendly amendment?
Go ahead, Peter.
I would like to. I think they should report their fundraising activities, but not their financial. I'm losing my financial result. Their financial stat. I'd like to hear.
It might be hard this year.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's leave this and.
I don't disagree.
Now. And in fact, legally, we have to know ultimately their fundraising activities because there are certain fundraising activities that we can't allow during. Christy? I heard you, Donna.
Why can't we say something like are exempt from reporting their financial status but must report fundraising activities? I mean, it's just something as simple as that.
Okay. I mean, I'm saying okay. Does the Constitution chair...
Exempt from reporting... Just I don't know what their financial status means exactly, but... I mean, I get what you're going for.
The financial status. They're exempt from, you said they're exempt from reporting their financial status,
but must report fundraising efforts, but then continue.
Yeah, okay, got it.
We could get rid of and financial information.
Yeah. Whatever.
Or just get rid of fundraising activities and keep that shall be exempt from reporting financial information.
Yeah.
Other than their fundraising activities. How about that?
Okay.
Just making my life more miserable here.
Gabe, you need to be getting these if you can.
Shall be exempt from reporting financial information.
We'll get it correct.
Donna,
do you still have your question?
Yes, ma'am. My question is, why would you not want to put a date?
What date? What are you talking about?
The date that we need to have the information due. The chapters have that are not.
It will be set. You know, for instance, now we're asking for chapters to do stuff monthly, but obviously we're going to all need it all by the end of the year. But we wanted to do it more than once a year so that we wouldn't have to do it all at the end of the year. Gene seeks the floor.
I was wondering if you could repeat. I missed the part that I think was that these groups that are incorporated, they provide the office with verification that they actually are incorporated with their number. I think that's what Kathy was asking for, and I missed what language you came up with.
Okay, let me.
Jeff is.
Fix something and
He's
read
fixing
the.
Fixing and then reading.
I'm going to read the section as I hopefully now have it.
Yes.
chapters and affiliates who have verified with the CCB office that they hold their own 501c3 status are exempt from reporting financial information other than their fundraising activities to the state office. However, these chapters and affiliates are still responsible for reporting information to the appropriate state and federal entities.
I think they wanted to take out the school.
No, leave it. We aim to please. All in favor of this amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. Frank seeks the floor.
I rise to make a motion that we direct the Constitution and Bylaws Committee to review the question of appropriate reporting requirements for affiliates and chapters with 501c3 status in order to return a possible amendment to clarify these matters at next year's convention. I think there are a lot of issues that go beyond the scope of today's discussion but deserve consideration.
Frank,
I'd like to.
This, Jeff.
First, is there a second? If there isn't. I want to speak in
Jeff,
of opposition.
I think both of the. we have Jeff and then Gabe.
I want to speak in opposition because I think there's a lot more than just the Constitution and Bylaws Committee here. For example, it is my understanding that there's now a way to give PIN numbers to all of our subordinate entities so that we would not be responsible for doing this reporting. This is something that the CEO and the president are going to have to look at, because this could really minimize our liability, and it may change how we decide to address this whole thing, in part. So let's not limit this to the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. This is an effort that we must do this year, but it's broad-based.
Madam President, thank you. I also am in opposition, and the reason being that a resolution that we will hear in a little while may very well address this, that we are proposing to completely overhaul and update the entire Constitution for next year, and all parts and aspects of the Constitution will be looked at.
Okay.
All right. Just to repeat for the recording, that Frank said that he withdraws his motion.
Do we have hotel staff here?
Negative.
What?
No.
Negative. Paul, would you let us know? I asked that the staff who have been helping us be here at 10, and I don't know whether they are out there, or would you go?
The hotel staff or like volunteers?
No, the hotel. Yep.
Thank you, Madam President. That is the final resolution?
No.
Or constitutional amendment? I'm sorry, I guess I've been going to too many meetings this weekend. That is the final constitutional amendment for today. And so that concludes the 2017, I had to stop and think what year we're in, 2017 report of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee.
Do we need a motion to accept the report?
We do.
Okay. So I'm assuming you move to accept the report? Gabe? We have a motion to accept the report. Second. All in favor of accepting the report, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. Just 1 second.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was my fault.
Okay, I'm sorry. So we do have, could the hotel staff who was here please come up and introduce themselves to us? Could you give them a mic? I apologize. I didn't know you have been patiently waiting.
We've been here.
We're so sorry.
It's okay. We are volunteers. Come on down, Eric. We are volunteers through the Hilton Hotel. We also have Girl Scouts here, but my name is Adie Vaughn. I'm through the community with my business. It's called BLM Entertainment, which stands for Black Lucy Music, and I do dog parties, all kind of little events, but I come from the entertainment industry, and the Hilton Hotel have been mentoring me for about 10 years. So I've been volunteering through the Hilton.
Hi, my name is Crystal Alcantar. I'm a student at Cal State Northridge.
So we have volunteers.
It is my pleasure to be here today assisting you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm one of Babette's students, and I go to Northridge as well. And pleasure to see you guys. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Kyle. I am also one of the Cal State Northridge volunteers, and it's been awesome helping you guys out these last few days.
And just on behalf of Babette Shade and the hotel, we want to say thank you. We hope that you had a wonderful experience here. And any comments you have or any things you want to say, we'd be happy to get a staff member, but we do thank you for being here. We hope everyone has a blessed holiday coming too as well.
Okay. Now, so you all need to stay for while we read you two resolutions that we have.
Okay, we're going to begin the resolutions process where we usually end it. With our first is 2017-8, Hotel Management and Staff. Whereas the management and staff of the Hilton Woodland Hills Los Angeles Hotel have, as they did in 2015, provided exemplary services to the California Council of the Blind and its conference and convention attendees. And whereas these services have been an important factor in making the 2017 conference and convention a resounding success, now therefore be resolved that this organization commend and thank the management and staff of the Hilton Woodland Hills Los Angeles Hotel for their outstanding efforts. And the committee recommends that you pass.
Of this resolution, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. It passes.
Woo-hoo.
Now Jeff is going to read our other resolution.
As soon as I can pull it up.
Most Scott and Babette and others who have been working with us most closely through the convention are not here today, but they'll obviously receive these resolutions.
I may let you do it. One more chance and I'll... Doggone it. Oh, no, we don't want to go there.
Volunteers still here, patiently waiting.
All right, so somehow lost here, but I'm going to read it the way I wrote it a few minutes ago. Whereas the volunteers at the 2017 California Council of the Blind Convention, including those from the Girl Scouts of America, those from the Cal State, the CSU Northridge Hospitality Industry Training Class, and those who made the trek from Sacramento, have done an outstanding job during the 2017 conference and convention. Now, therefore, be it resolved that we thank and commend these volunteers for making our convention such a resounding success. And the committee recommends a do pass.
Hey. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? It passes. And I want you to know that for every volunteer for whom we have information, email, contact information, they will receive a copy of this resolution. Thank you again. And I was, is that, who seeks the floor? Ken Metz seeks the floor. Your name isn't Madam President.
This one's short. You know, I think we also, the one thing we forgot here is to include, even though we'll do it ourselves, but it also has to include the puppy raisers. That
okay, we'll add them.
Assisted. We will add that in, absolutely, Ken. Oh, there is no question. We will make sure. That's a very friendly amendment.
Very friendly amendment. And even though we already passed it, we're going to amend it.
Yep.
And nobody's going to object. Okay, thank you again, volunteers.